Well, just imagine you had betrayed your best friend, the person whom you loved or admired the most, the person who revealed something startling, wonderful, and new, someone you had shared all sorts of adventures with and talked to deep into the night, whom you realized was a pretty extraordinary person who offered you hope and a vision of a new future, one to whom you had made heartfelt promises and vows. Imagine then that you had denied what you believed, that your very silence condemned your friend, that you gave way to that gut-wrenching and shriveling hot fear when confronted, or when put under pressure, you conformed and disavowed what you knew was good and true. People, and that's us, you and me, do it all the time. Perhaps not as dramatically, but we get cross, we defend ourselves and lay blame. We can point fingers and privately accuse others. We want to be accepted, part of the in crowd, and maybe secretly see ourselves as not like them, superior or above other people. Most of all, we want to be safe. Safe. And that asks us not to rock the boat when things get rough. But often in our silence, we deny our best selves and condemn the other in our midst. Well, this passage from John's Gospel is very evocative and explores these very human responses and traits. The seven disciples who had followed Jesus seemed to me forlorn as they set out at night to go fishing. It sort of feels quiet and somber as they resume their lives as rough fishermen. So much has happened. Their friend, who had loved them all so well, who opened their eyes to astounding possibilities, their leader, their mentor, their guru, has been crucified. Their hopes and dreams are dashed. They feel rotten because they denied knowing him, and now he's dead. Imagine them thinking, if only we'd said something, if only. Full of regret. Is it too late? Can I make amends? And knowing really how impossible it is, wishing it were just a bad dream and go away. We all know how that feels, don't we? The catch echoes their mental state. Empty, nothing, no fish. At dawn, as they are heading back in, someone calls from the beach and tells them to cast their net again. They do so. Instantly, it's overwhelming. Fish galore. It's at that moment that they realize it's Jesus. Peter desperately leaps over the side and races through the water to the shore. Is it really him, they think, as they eat the fish and the bread that Jesus has waiting for them by the fire? They know it is, but are too afraid or awestruck to ask. Perhaps they are frightened of condemnation for their faithfulness and their betrayal. Jesus asks Peter three times if he loves him best of all. And each time, Peter responds more fervently, "Yes, Lord, you know I love you," or words to that effect. No recriminations, no punishing words, no laying on of guilt. You could say it was the second chance we all want when we've wounded one we love. Well, this story at the end of John's Gospel is outwardly about post-resurrection appearances, miraculous abundance as in the fish, and the commissioning of Peter as their leader. But it is equally about guilt and redemption. Most dramatic stories and situations have a fall guy, someone who takes the rap. In this instance, all of the disciples were guilty in their fearful silence. But it is Peter who denies Jesus three times in the garden, and this casts him as the fall guy. But it's Jesus, really, who is the definitive fall guy here. The disciples weren't steadfast or loyal. They melted away when the heat was on, and he went to a shameful and an ugly death. Jesus could also be seen as a scapegoat, or the sacrificial victim that many ancient cults and belief systems have demanded. In Judaism, one of the holiest days of the year is Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement when people fast and pray, a day that even most secular Jews observe. It's all about repentance and reconciliation. In biblical times, the priests took two goats to the temple. One goat was sacrificed. The other goat was prayed over and took on the sins of the people. Then this goat, dressed with a scarlet strip on its head, representing the sins of the people, this goat was driven into the wilderness to die, usually driven over a cliff. This was the scapegoat. Euphemistically, the fall guy who took on the sins of the people. René Girard is a prominent and influential contemporary thinker. He maintains that Jesus was taken to the temple and sacrificed to satisfy and satiate the pent-up frustrations and desires of the people. Girard believes that society inherently runs on mimetic desire, or imitation in common parlance. That instinctively or deep down we are imitators, don't we learn first by imitating our parents and our peers? What another has determines our desires. We want things we can never have or be. Power, prestige, possessions, money, the car, the girl, to be like dad, whatever. Girard reckons that this is the root of all the violence in our society, and that here it culminates in the death of Jesus. Jesus is the other, the victim, the scapegoat, and once he is sacrificed, the wild violence is diffused, and he is elevated and becomes holy. The people have released all their inner turmoil, ferocity is spent and replaced by a desire for sanctity. Importantly, Girard believes that once we realize this internal mechanism is at work, we can alter our behavior. Scapegoating is something we have all witnessed or experienced. With the weakest or the most vulnerable, the other is picked upon or driven to misery, to fear, and is alienated, perhaps to death. It is seen in the transferring of the pain and rage of a group onto an object, an animal, a person, or a whole race of people. We've all seen it in school, haven't we? We see it in the violent frustration of gangs. We see it in phone boxes that are smashed in parliaments, in families, in all strata of society. And I'm quite sure it contributes to our terrible child abuse record in this country. And maybe even some of us here have suffered the scapegoating at some time in our lives. Well, Girard believes that Jesus is killed because his humility, his wisdom, his goodness are a threat to others who claim these values and virtues for themselves. And that his resurrection reveals that we are always wrong in the one we alienate or destroy, and that often this very one, this scapegoat, the disturbed, the victim in our midst, is the very one we need to help us see ourselves, to redeem us, and to make us whole. In this light, the story of the barbecue by the lake, this breakfast with Jesus, becomes a much deeper look at us and what Jesus offers. Here, he is resurrected not to prove that we can attain immortality, or that with him on our side we can have what we want, or that we are right or good or better. This story shows us what we are and what we can be, what I believe we are really made to be. It helps us to see more clearly what is happening around us, to observe ourselves, our own shortcomings and of those close to us, and to try to live openly and thoughtfully into that awareness. Jesus doesn't condemn Peter and the disciples for their betrayal. He feeds them with fish and bread and with a wide open and abundant, generous love. It's a love that liberates, absolves, and brings the hope of new life, free from victimization and guilt. Peter and the disciples are reconciled and redeemed to a clearer and a better understanding of the possibilities of love, the possibilities of life, offered freely in the gift of knowledge in Jesus Christ, as we are offered the same.